All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome back to day two here at the Planet Microcap Showcase Vancouver in association with Small Cap Discoveries. We are very excited for another full day of keynotes, presentations, one-on-ones, and just want to again thank you all for just putting your efforts forward. I mean, yesterday that was truly amazing and really fun to watch. All the engagement, questions, all the good stuff. So let's keep that up again today, and we got plenty of coffee to do so, and trees. So with all that being said, I'd like to introduce our first keynote presentation here at the Planet Microcap Showcase Vancouver in association with Small Cap Discoveries Day Two. We got Harold Leishman from Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management.
Thanks, Bobby. Very kind introduction. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to show up so early in the morning, especially after what may have been a big night for a few of you last night. Yesterday, Paul and Brent both did an excellent job outlining their investment strategies and their case for why making investments in Canadian microcaps can be a spectacular place to put your higher risk or speculative capital to work. Today, I want you to think about the Canadian microcap market in a slightly different way. Morgan Housel wrote The Psychology of Money, which I happen to think is a fantastic book. It may be a bit simple for most of you in the room, but I think it's really important to think about why we invest and what our purpose is. Chapter 5 is titled Getting Wealthy versus Staying Wealthy. Good investing is not necessarily about consistently making, or sorry, not necessarily about making good decisions. It's about consistently not screwing up. Oh, trying to figure out how to make this. I will say one of the most gratifying aspects of being a retail broker is seeing retail clients turn a few hundred thousand dollars into $1 million or more in a positive cycle. Sometimes you even get to witness the creation of generational wealth, and it is a thrill to see friends achieve that kind of success. On the flip side, one of the hardest parts of the business is seeing clients go full cycle and go all the way back to a few hundred thousand dollars, or sometimes potentially even worse. Today, I want to sort of offer some insights on how I think we can stop screwing up so much at the top. My name is Harold Leishman. As Bobby said, I'm a senior investment advisor with CG Wealth Management and one of the founding partners of LLC Private Wealth. My job on the team is to focus on the small and microcap part of the portfolios. I do it in conjunction with Julian Godot, who's here in the audience. I'm sure preparing to heckle me at some point in the not too distant future. One of our other partners is Michael Blanc. He manages the conservative side of the portfolios. He's been doing it for decades, and he's consistently a top quartile performer with his portfolios. Hey, Bobby, how do I scroll this up? This part. Oh, I see. Okay. That makes it better. All right. Now, the data in your Planet Microcap booklets comes from a snippet of the data we use in our office to help us organize and look at the quantitative data of Canadian microcaps. Like many of you, we're highly data-focused, very much focused on cash flows, growth, margin expansion, and that sort of thing, trying to find companies where we can get significant returns, hopefully with a lot less risk. We also strongly believe in the qualitative aspect of research, and that's why opportunities like Planet Microcap, where you can sit down and have a face-to-face with the management teams of the companies you own, is a great opportunity to better your investment returns. We do eat our own cooking. We never make recommendations to clients that we are not actively going to be buying ourselves or have bought ourselves, and that's just part of our general philosophy. What a spectacular year it has been. Paul and Trevor, congrats on bringing us such a great slate of companies last year. It was actually quite incredible. Had you bought an equal dollar amount of every company that showed up, you'd be up 45%. At that rate, you double your money every 2 years. So that was a spectacular event. And I don't know, but I feel like this year, there's some more competition. This conference feels about twice as big as it was last year. I think you're starting to see that in the market as well. Companies posting good news are starting to move a little faster. Does anybody remember 2022? In 2022, it seemed like companies would post good news and probably go sideways. Maybe they'd pop up for a little bit and go down. Any company that posted negative news got absolutely crushed. So now that we're all a little wealthier, I want to just remind everybody about perhaps staying wealthier. So here's a question. Is it more important to capture the largest gains? And this is a standard slide you get when you go into the bank for wealth management advice. You know, the typical commentary is if you're out of the market, you run the risk of missing the 10 best weeks. The chart here, the black line is the MSCI World Index from 2000 to 2014. The orange line is if you exclude the 10 best weeks, and you can see the performance is terrible. It's negative, actually. And this is what you get from the banks. And there's a variety of reasons why they pitch it this way. But basically, market timing doesn't work. Find good companies, buy good companies, hold good companies, and hang on. I have to admit, I stole these slides from my partner's slide deck. The previous chart you can see is at the bottom there. The MSCI is in black, and the excluding the 10 best weeks is in orange. The blue line is what happens if you exclude the 10 worst weeks. Now, does anybody remember 2022? Imagine if we could have missed some of the worst weeks that we endured in microcap land. And at the end of February 22, I was looking at the conservative portfolio I have with my partner, Mike, and he had it positioned 35% in cash. And he wasn't doing it because he was reading tea leaves. He's very data-driven. He's bottom-up, focused like us. But he also has a macro overlay. And I remember thinking at the time, as my microcap portfolios were largely fully invested, how come I didn't have a macro overlay for the microcap market? Mathematically, it's fairly straightforward. If you don't lose as much on the downside, you don't need to catch as much of the market upside to come out significantly ahead. The math is the math. It's fairly straightforward. And I do think this is an interesting example of how we can potentially screw up less or stay wealthier through the market cycles. We are here to talk about microcaps and not large cap investing. But before we do, I just want to give an offbeat example of something. So northwest of Vancouver is a beautiful place called Skookumchuck Narrows. Paul knows where it is. It's part of the Pacific Ocean. These narrows are about 300 meters wide. On one side of the narrows are 55 kilometers of ocean inlets. And twice daily, when the tide changes, 200 billion gallons of water flow through these narrows in about 6 hours. That's the equivalent of 300,000 Olympic swimming pools, all being emptied at the same time. The result of this is that when the tide is running, the ocean on one side of the narrows versus the others can have a 3-meter difference, or 9 feet for our American friends. The water moves at about 30 kilometers an hour. It creates standing waves. You see the surfer here enjoying that. Rapids and whirlpools that can be up to 20 meters across. It is truly a powerful spectacle, and if you ever get the chance, I strongly recommend going up to witness that. I will say, if you find yourself in a small boat out in these waters and you don't have a macro view as to which way the water's going, you will find yourself in trouble. But what does this have to do with microcaps? Now, I did post this data in my talk last year, but nobody showed up, and so I get to reuse it. The Canadian venture capital market is really a unique ecosystem, and I think the data here is no less spectacular than the tidal rapids at Skookumchuck. I'm going to show this data a couple of different ways, but very simply, it's the peaks and valleys of the monthly dollar value turnover of the TSXV and the CSE combined. So, you know, if you have 100,000 shares trading at a dollar, that's $100,000 in value. 100,000 at $2 is 200,000. It's a very sensitive measure. Naturally, higher prices, higher volumes gives you an exponential movement on the indicator. Since the peak in 2008, there have been five microcap bear markets averaging a little over 2 years in length, with an 84% collapse in dollar value liquidity, and four bull markets that each lasted approximately a year, a little bit more, that had about a 900% improvement in liquidity. If you were new to investing and you put $100,000 into microcaps in February of 2021, you would have seen the market dissolved by 91% in terms of activity on that marketplace. And for sure, there were a couple of good winners in there, but for the most part, it was hard to be invested then and exit unscathed. So if you're an investor in the Canadian microcap market and you don't have a reliable macro view, I think you're putting yourself at risk of giving up good chunks of your gains, or possibly worse, if you aren't aware of where you are in the cycle. So these massive swings in the flow of capital significantly amplify or depress the drivers of microcap valuations. And this is completely outside of your control, regardless of how much due diligence you do or how clever you are. This is the tide going in and out. However, it is relatively easy to see where you are in the cycle. The reasons for the market moves can vary quite a bit. There was a commodity super cycle. There was a cannabis market. There was COVID-19, where everybody got sent free money and stayed home to learn how to make sourdough and trade stocks in their pajamas. I mean, all of these things had huge impacts on microcaps and the valuations. Picking good stocks is still critical, and so I'm not saying that that's not important, but I think you have to view it in the context of where you are in terms of capital flows. I believe not having an objective frame of reference to this really sets us up for making mistakes or making the same mistake over and over again. You know, an example would be you start off with $100,000 and you make 10 $10,000 investments. You're successful, and by the top of the market, you've got $500,000, and now you're making $50,000, $60,000 investments, you know, but the quality of what you're buying is lower, the valuations are way higher, and frankly, when the tide goes out, it's all going out. So I think, though, if you look closely at this chart, you'll see that this chart only goes to May 2023. And so given this information, where do you think we are now? Paul and Trevor picked 45% returns from this time last year to now. Institutions have started coming into the market. You can see them driving the valuations of a number of companies. And stocks are starting to move pretty quickly on positive news, up 10 cents, 15 cents, whatever it is. So anybody have any guesses where we are in that chart? Are we mid-range? Are we bottom range? As I mentioned earlier, if you haven't been focused on quality microcaps, i.e. those with revenue, earnings, and growth, this market still feels pretty terrible. The peak value traded in 2021 was in February. It was a little over $14 billion that month. Currently, we're churning through about $1.3 billion. Which is staggering. So going back to Morgan Housel's not screwing up, We have put a simple color overlay just to give people a sense of maybe getting an idea where are we in this cycle. I would say do not stand in the way of tidal outflows or capital outflows, as the case may be. And remember, if you could avoid the 10 worst weeks of Canadian microcap markets, I think we'll all do a lot better. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying that this is a magic bullet that's going to tell you when to go all in cash, but I just think it's a chance to reflect and invest a little differently when you have a better understanding of where you are in the cycle. We're all optimistic, self-confident, and aggressive investors, not as people, but as investors. And I think those qualities suit us well at the bottom side, but they get amplified at the top, and we get overconfident and over-aggressive and put too much money down at the wrong time of the cycle. That is about it. I would say we're not even out of the first inning of this market. The other comment I would make is duration from 2011 to 2016 was a five-year stretch of pretty terrible markets. There was great stock picks and microcaps in that time frame for people focused on cash flow and growth, and the broad general riffraff is not the right word, but the unthinking investors weren't in the market, and so there was a great chance for people who were focused on quality and growth to make great returns for long periods of time. And I hope it doesn't spike again too soon, because I think this gives us the chance to think, and as Trevor said, turn over rocks, or Paul said, turn over rocks to find great opportunities. But at some point, we should all think about making smaller bets with shorter timeframes, or perhaps even move a little bit of cash to the sidelines. That's all I got. Questions? The question was, if the data was changed to only show profitable companies, where do I think it would be? It wouldn't be as extreme, but I think it would show the same. I think it would show the same peaks and valleys. Right now, the people fighting for the best deals are all focused on earnings and quality and growth. But when one of those commodity markets kicks in, or a cannabis market, and somebody has suddenly made $1 million in a company that has no revenue, they're now like flipping it into all kinds of other deals. And so the competition for ideas and private placements is just amplified. Maybe it wouldn't be as much as that, but it would be the same thing, I think. I don't think so. I don't think it's the right thing to get out. I think we just have to change our investing behavior so we're not all in. I think many microcap investors are all in all the time. And as I said, when you go through the cycle from, you know, good valuations now to extreme valuations, you're making bigger and bigger bets that are much more aggressive in nature. And I think that's what has to change. Maybe take smaller bets and have a shorter term time horizon at the top of the cycle. Really assisting of where the cycle is. Getting all out, I think is a non-starter for probably everybody in the room, myself included. And I wouldn't want to be all out. I'm too optimistic for that. Perfect. Thank you for your time.